The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent.
Welcome to podcast number 311. My name is Jared Reimer. I hope that you will enjoy the podcast as much as I have putting it together for you. Facebook is in the news yet again with some more security updates. We talk about it. An alleged child porn lord is facing U.S. extradition as technology was used to hide the activity. We'll talk about that. An LA man gets 20 years behind jail. We talked about this story way back in 2017 into 2018, and it even made national news outside of the tech circles. This was the gentleman that was responsible for the swatting and murder of an innocent man. I have some transit app updates that might be of interest to those of you who utilize the app with VoiceOver for iOS. And Braille transcribing is about to get a whole lot of fun. Did I do the assignment correctly? We'll have to wait and see, but I talk briefly about what I'm doing to help automate the process of Braille transcription using what's called percent codes with Braille 2000. I talked about what I had done with the file, of course, with Bob's help, because Bob extracted the text so that I have easier access to it. And we worked together so I understood how to use the percent codes, and we explained a little bit on this segment how that works. Contact information is at the end of the program as usual, so please stay tuned, and the show notes are going to have links to the articles in the first several sections. Until next podcast, everybody, I'm Jared Reimer. Let's start with Facebook. Welcome to podcast number 311. Facebook is back in the news, and this particular story is a very interesting one because it's still in development where things are being looked at. But yet, I have some questions in regards to this. Facebook has not been the only company in blunders like this. There have been issues with Twitter and others as well. The article title from Krebs on Security is entitled, Facebook Stored Hundreds of Millions of Passwords in Plain Text Files. And the numbers on here are quite interesting. Security failures are going to happen everywhere. But after so long, my question is going to be, how many sorries are we going to hear before we finally say it's enough? I know LinkedIn had a breach, and that was well before I signed up in 2016. In fact, that particular breach was in 2014. The probe for Facebook in this particular article, which will be linked on the show notes when the podcast is released, they claim in this article that Facebook built applications that logged unencrypted passwords of Facebook users and stored them in plain text on internal company servers. The employee who spoke to Krebs on security spoke on condition of anonymity because they are not authorized to speak to the press in regards to the issue. This investigation so far indicates that 200 million to 600 million passwords were stored in plain text. 20,000 employees had access to this, but they're trying to determine how many passwords were exposed and how long. So far, they claim, but we can't say for sure, that this dates back to 2012. Access logs show that some 2,000 employees or developers made internal inquiries in the approximate number range of 9 million inquiries. Now, why would they be doing this? And that is my question. Why would they be wanting to make inquiries for data that they should not be accessing at all? Unless there was some reason to disable the account, but even then, if it's built correctly, you should be able to disable one's account on your own access. For example, in the control panel, there is a service called Web Host Manager. And in the Web Host Manager, you can access any of the accounts that belong to you. And of course, if you own the server, you have access to every account, no matter who it's assigned to. My point of this portion is to say that while I'm not giving instructions how to do it, because I do have that access on my own, it can be done. They are claiming that the longer they go into the analysis, the less numbers are going to be, because they're only trying to count those in their data set, and they're working to reduce that effort. But why are you trying to hide the problem? I think we need to know the truth. We need to know what's happening. Scott Renfro said that the company is not ready to talk about specific numbers yet, and they plan to alert the affected users, and password resets would more than likely be required. According to the investigation, they've not found any cases where someone was looking intentionally for passwords and there was no signs of misuse. These passwords were inadvertently logged, and they only want to force a password change if there's signs of misuse. So there could be password resets, But as far as they know, they don't think so. But why is it logging passwords? I don't know. It could have been a mistake, but a mistake that is from 2012 to the beginning of 2019. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plus years. We're going to call it 5+ years here because we don't know when this exactly started. It doesn't give me a month in this article. They are expected to notify hundreds of millions of users and tens of millions of other Facebook users and tens of thousands of Instagram users. Wow. And Facebook Lite is designed for those on low speed connections and low spec phones. GitHub and Twitter were forced to admit similar stumbles. But both of those cases, the passwords were relatively small accessible to people. And only within those organizations and for shorter periods of time. January 2019 is when it was first discovered, when engineers were looking at logs and saw that passwords were inadvertently logged. So that's a good sign. And they were looking at new code. And that prompted them to set up a team to figure out how long this has been going on and try and figure out why. I think they're doing the best they can, but they have also had a bunch of other issues to deal with too. The New York Times reported that federal prosecutors are conducting an investigation and data deals are part of it. So, I don't know exactly what all that means, and I haven't read that particular article, but that's a linked article from this. There's been some other issues as well. So, when the article was updated after publication, there is a link that Facebook provided, and he links to that. I just wonder if this was a true accident, or if someone was setting it up, and then when they were made aware of it, they go, oh, and they do this whole investigation because they have to. And of course, we don't know if that one employee who may have set it up by accident had any involvement in the investigation. This is just absolutely strange. And I guess we'll have to see what happens as this whole ordeal moves forward. So, what I'm curious about is whether you have been, or do you think you'll be, notified about this by Facebook? And if you have been notified, what did they advise you to do? Please get in touch. Alleged child porn lord faces extradition. Somebody created a company, and his company was one of these companies that allowed various websites on their network and basically turned the other cheek. Now, the company name was called Freedom Hosting, and the operator's name was Eric Ioane Marcus. He made a lot of money. All he was doing was selling web services. But this year, after 6 years of him being in Iranian jail, he will be extradited back to the United States to face charges. But I don't want to talk about necessarily the case. I reread the article, and when I brought this up on a conference, somebody asked me, how do they do that? Well, according to this story, this particular story started after the FBI found a particular vulnerability in the Firefox browser. At that time was version 17. But the sites could only be browsed through Tor. And it was built on the Firefox browser, this Tor bundle. This allowed them to see the true identity of anyone coming out of Tor. And as Tor has been talked about, it's known as the Onion Router, but they don't want to be known as the Onion Router. They just want to be known now as the Tor Project. And so that's what it's now known as. So, someone who had Tor, or the bundle, or another way to access it, this is the only way you could visit this site. RTE, an Irish media outlet, reported that in 2013 he had regained access to one of his servers, and another publication talked about how he tried to dive for his laptop to possibly shut it down so that they could not get data. He holds dual Irish US citizenship. And he was looking at that particular time to go to Russia, where it could be harder to extradite him. And that's all I'm going to say about the case, because as a web host, you have to make sure that the content that you are serving on your network is safe for users, right? My provider, and most United States providers, do not allow adult content unless first being on a page when you first get there that says this website contains this content, and by continuing you are indicating that you are this age or you have legal agreements to view such content or you have parental consent or whatever it might be. I forget exactly what it says word for word, but the basis is that you are told what is on the web page and that you have to be a certain age to view the content, and by continuing you agree to that or have the proper permissions. But there are sites that don't have that, and as demonstrated here, you can have a site anywhere you want. And the Tor network allows people to browse the internet from any location they want. Granted, the software they're using actually hides their identity. And as we've talked about on this particular podcast through Tor stories, people have gotten in trouble for their actions. The last major one was Ross Ulbricht, who I believe, if I remember correctly, was in the United States and selling drugs and other contraband in the dark underbelly of the internet. I'm not going to sit here and say Tor is bad to use. I have not used it myself. I talked to somebody in a conference at one point about Tor specifically, not specifically what he found, but more specifically for accessibility. And he says that this Tor system is accessible. So we, as blind people, could use it if the need arose. Now, would I purposefully go looking for things that I don't want? No. But he was also talking about the way Tor has its addresses. Instead of a website like KrebsOnSecurity.com, JaredReimer.net, Menvi.org. Sites like that are something like E521948677WWE498. I don't know how many characters specifically it has. He said it was quite a long, a number of them. And he was talking about what he saw, and he had really no appropriate words for what he was seeing because he was trying to keep it simple but effective to what's out there. And while I've not used it, I completely understand how convenient it would be if you were trying to do something that you don't want to have tracked. And so there could be some good use cases for it. But as a provider, you do not want to be liable for what your customers are doing, especially when it comes to hosting, because you want to make sure your network is clean as possible. There are going to things that are going to get on the network. We were targeted on my network before through various websites, and things were uploaded that were malicious, but yet we did not do it. None of my customers did it. And today we still don't know exactly what happened. But hosting a website underground and a provider probably getting notices saying you need to take this down because this is illegal, and he either says okay, will take care of it within this period or doesn't. Then it comes back to bite him later. I mean, now he's going to practically get life if convicted once he's here in the United States. I forget exactly what the terms are, and I don't want to go back up and look at the article to go find out because it's not important. But what is important here is two things. First, the FBI or other federal agencies have people who are trained to help investigate crime, and they understand the technology behind this particular network. Or they understand the internet as a whole, and they understand what's good and what's bad. And they were trained to look for signs of things that an investigator would need. So basically they're investigator, but yet they're in the tech field. And secondly, this type of thing is happening now more and more. It used to be that people like him and Ross would be able to get away with it because investigators did not know how to go about the dark web to get information. And you got people like Brian Krebs, whose mission is to report on things like this because other reporters and other websites don't. And one of the reasons why Brian left the Washington Post was because he would write about such things, and then his stories got changed, which took it out of context and didn't show the true meaning of what he was trying to convey. And they try to get him to quit writing about such things. But this is very valuable in the way that people need to know what's out there so that they can be protected. And the only way to do that is to write stories about it or have somebody who has had inside knowledge of how this type of thing works, has a presence, can be trusted, but yet when they get busted, by that time, they don't know why. And I'm not saying that Brian didn't have a hand in this, because truly, he's an investigative reporter. Not a, here's what's going on, go investigate this. The only time he did this was when it was reported that drugs were sent to his home, and it was talked about in the underground forums, and he spotted it. And so he called his people that he knows and told them, look, this is what's happening. Here are the messages. I want somebody over here. And they said, call us when it gets there and we'll pick it up. Meantime, Brian went to work to try and figure out who these guys were. And eventually they got picked up. So that's what Brian does. So I really like the reporting of what he's doing here. And again, my goal was not to talk about child pornography as a whole, but to talk about it in a way where you have to understand the type of technology used, in this case, the Tor browser, which is a network specific thing you can install, you know, on Firefox, or even I believe they have their own browser. And that is the only way that you can access sites like what's being talked about in the article, unless you use Tor to browse the World Wide Web anonymously, because there are some things that you just don't want your ISP to know, and there's no shame in it. Maybe you have had some issues with, you know, credit card theft, and by rerouting your traffic and you're doing online shopping, then that is why you're using it, because you don't trust the regular internet, even though nowadays it's HTTPS, otherwise known as secure. So, that is why I want to talk about this particular article, not for its inappropriate nature, but to talk more about the technology and how investigators are now learning to gain access to networks so that they can investigate these people who are blatantly committing crimes. Your thoughts are welcome. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope that we can get a handle on some good news where a man behind a fatal swatting case gets 20 years in jail, and it, I hope, will be a deterrent for people to not get themselves involved in this. So, we talked about this particular case where a Los Angeles man went and had a hand indirectly in killing a gentleman who did absolutely nothing wrong, but yet this started on a gaming website. And if I remember right, this, I believe, was 2017 into 18. And I did hear about it in news coverage outside of my local sources where I get tech news and, of course, this underground news that Krebs covers. So, Tyler Barris admitted to this role of this one gentleman's death as well as his role in other non-fatal swatting attacks. He also made false claims to emergency responders about phony situations or bomb threats. So, I believe we talked about this at the end of 2017 or the beginning of 2018's set of podcasts. Because the article basically talks about the case in a nutshell. Now, the good news, if you call it that, is that the officers who killed this one gentleman, Andrew Finch, will not be charged. And I don't see why an officer should be charged with killing somebody when they're responding to something and they feel threatened. But there have been cases where they were not supposed to use weapons or do, and maybe training is the best way to go about it. Look, don't just act out and be scared. Observe the situation and determine if there could be an issue, because in this case, this father of two could still be alive today. I believe he had a couple of kids. And I don't remember all of the particulars of why shots were fired. Now, the thing about Barris is that he has made other swatting calls, bomb threats, and other calls to the FBI, the FCC in Washington, D.C., and he also made bomb threat and other calls from Los Angeles to emergency numbers in Ohio, New Hampshire, Nevada, Utah, Illinois, Texas, Arizona, Missouri, Maine, New Mexico, New York, Michigan, Florida, and Canada. Lots and lots of areas covered here, ladies and gentlemen. And the software is easy to get. It's called a spoof card. And many different companies sell them. Now, I've played with one from spoofcard.com by calling my own number. And I had put some money on it. And I went on and took a look to see how it worked. And I did this after I was involved, not in a swatting case, but a social engineering case where an individual went around calling people, asking for information. When he didn't get what he wanted, he cut off phone lines. And what happened with me was that he went after my girlfriend and tried calling her. And it's like, you know what? The only thing you can do is change your number. I'm sorry. But, you know, he's in my account. And this is what the deal is. And so some hacking, some social engineering, and the technology is used for bad news. Somebody quoted about the fact that they hope that this is a deterrent to those who want to get into this, that this is not okay, especially in the game community. Swatting is just a terrible idea. And I hope that this result brings peace to the Finch family, who had nothing to do with anything in this case. The district attorney in this case decided in April 2018 that the officer will not face charges and won't be named because he isn't charged. Of course, Brian Krebs has a case too that happened to him, and it's linked here too. So he was also involved in one case and two other attempted swattings. He's glad that this is a step in the right direction. It may serve as a deterrent. And this linked to a 2017 article in February of that year where two men who sent heroin to his home were sentenced. And the swatting attack in 2013 is a 2014 article, or 2013 article, on the 15th of March, "The world has no room for cowards." So I think I agree with Brian that police forces around the country should be trained on exercising restraint and using deadly force, especially when it comes to hostage or bomb threats that have hallmarks of a swatting hoax. For example, somebody who is reporting a bomb threat or any other type of emergency will call 911. And according to this particular article, the perpetrators of swatting will call local and state emergency numbers, and they are non-emergency numbers. And this is what Tyler ended up doing. He called non-emergency numbers using technology and other people to carry out his crime. And those people are also waiting their turn. They also use text-to-speech TTY services for the hearing impaired to go ahead and have that SWAT call, as was the case in his 2013 attack. And that text-to-speech TTY services links to a TTY, and the website is aboutTTY.com. So the TTY, which I've never been accustomed to because I'm not necessarily deaf, but I've heard of it, it simply stands for text telephone. TTY is the more accepted term And they are used by many people, not just people who are deaf. It's also called a TDD, otherwise known as a telecommunications device for the deaf. So that's why they have TDD or TTY. It is a special device that help people who are deaf, hard of hearing, or speech impaired that allow them to type because their disability doesn't allow them to talk. A TTY is required at both ends of the conversation for this to work. So, I'm not going to go into the whole detail on this. I think I'm going to go read this on my own time. But I figured that this would be a start to learning, because while I've heard of TTYs, I've never used one. And now reading this, and this article was published toward the end of March on Krebs on Security, the one that I've been talking about in this segment, you always learn new things. And so the fact that TTYs have been used in crime situations where someone would use it to hand over a swatting hoax or a particular other type of crime is something that I have never heard of before I read this particular article. I just don't understand what this world has come to. I honestly don't know. It is absolutely not the way the technology was supposed to be used. And that's sad. Let's share this story and let's talk about how we can deter people that we may know to not get involved in this type of activity. I think that's what we could do, is to talk about it, point people to the article so they can read about it, and say this is not what our technology, no matter what it is, should be used for. So, what do you say? Let's see what else we'll talk about on the podcast as it continues. This is Tech 311. All right, folks, welcome back to the podcast. I haven't talked about Transit App in a little while, and this isn't a full-blown demo, but I think this is going to affect a lot of people in the way that they use it. Recently, Transit App crashed, and I'm not sure if it's because of my 5S or what, but it seems to be running okay now. I'm not going to do a full demo, but I am going to do a quick demo. And so I want to just show you what's changed. Now, this isn't going to be real time per se, but they did make a change where if there is a connectivity problem, you can still get real time data, but I don't know how real time this is going to be. 1850. So there's a couple of other changes I want to point out too. So I'll open Transit, and they still have one bug in regards to Go, but I'm not going to talk about Go. So there it goes. Okay, so
751 or CTR, Universal / Studio City B, Ellipsis. Direction Canoga Station, next departure in 5, wheelchair access state unknown, 22 wheelchair access state unknown, 41 wheelchair access state unknown minutes, at stop Ventura / DeSoto wheelchair boarding state unknown.
Okay, so now they've got this wheelchair access unknown deal, but that's not what I want to really focus on today. This isn't real time as I thought. I haven't launched it in a little while, but if you do launch it and you do have real-time data, it'll stay real-time data. So that's not the point of this right now. So
set change directions.
If you swipe up and down from here,
activate.
You have activate
change directions.
And change directions. And, of course, Lyft is in here, too. I think they took Uber out because now I can't find it in the settings. But there's Lyft Economy and Lyft Shared. So let's activate it. Let's see what it does now.
751 or CT 750, Canoga Station, Ventura / DeSoto. Next departures, in 4 minutes wheelchair access state unknown, selected. In 21 minutes wheelchair access state unknown, in 40 minutes wheelchair access state unknown. Activate to change direction. Swipe up or down to select a custom action, then double tap to activate.
Okay. So, I had been used to just going in and doing, but now they say swipe up and down, so.
Change departure, see full schedule, activate.
Change full departure.
Change departure.
Departure.
See full schedule.
See full schedule.
Activate.
And activate.
Change departure. Activate.
So.
Start go. Button.
In go, when you start it,
close.
Which.
Leave in 7 minutes.
7:50 Canoga Station. Departing in 20 minutes.
It's telling me to leave in 7 minutes, and I'm not looking to leave, but.
7:50 Canoga Station. From Ventura / DeSoto. Departs in 20 minutes. Next departures in 39 minutes. Swipe up or down to select a custom action, then double tap to activate.
The same thing here.
Writing to. Set destination stop. Activate.
I had been looking for the set destination stop.
7:50 Canoga.
But now you swipe up and down.
Writing to. Set destination stop. Writing to.
So writing to doesn't seem to do anything, but set destination stop.
700. Set destination stop.
Is your Ventura typical.
Ventura /Topanga Canyon. Wheelchair boarding state unknown. Ventura / DeSoto. Ventura / Topanga. Oxnard / Topanga Canyon. Warner Center Transit Hub. Victory / Owens Mump. Canoga Platform 4. Select Canoga Platform. Ventura. Select map pin. Select destination. Select destination. Map pin. Cancel. Button.
So, the cancel button worked.
Offline mode. No real-time data. Offline mode. Airport. Offline mode. No real-time data. Offline mode. 73. Offline mode. Offline mode. No. Tap to mute. Tap to display. Snap. Close. Button.
And there's now a close button.
Stay and go to keep. Stay. Exit. Go. Button. Selected. 751. Offline. No real-time data.
So I bet you if I just turned off Wi-Fi instead of making it on offline mode, which is what it's currently in, then it would act a little bit differently. And also, there's still the search bar in the top portion of the app.
Offline. Airplane mode on. 1850. Offline. No real-time data.
Oh, it looked like it. Okay.
Offline. No real-time data.
All right, so I thought I saw the edit bar, but I think it's the focus of the app.
1855. Status bar item.
So now that I'm reminded of that, it's a slight little error on my part. But now, since I'm reminded of that, the where to button was moved. So now it's underneath the map. So now if you swipe up and down here, it's
plan trip to home. Activate. Plan trip to home. Line destination. Search feet. Choose on map. Line destination. Search choose on map. Current location. Tap Winnetka / Van Owen. Tap to set this suggestion as your location.
So
Winnetka / Van Owen. Enter a name for your favorite. Star. Enter a name for your add to favorites. Button. Add to favorite. Enter a name for your bear. School. Gym. Burger. Stop. Park. Couch. Worship. Work. Selected. Winnetka / Van Owen. Cancel. Button. Cancel.
It doesn't cancel it, but you get the idea.
App switcher. Transit. Closing. Transit.
I wasn't going to do a full-on demo, but just some things that have changed in transit that I think you should be aware of. It's now swipe up and down arrows, and I think this is going to help out in the long run where there was a lot of confusion. I want to make sure that things are accessible as possible, and I've used it. Ghost still works, although there is still one bug that I've reported a long time ago, but They have it, and I've been able to duplicate it on several different spots, but it's not a huge crucial deal. Let's see. I think that's about it. I was trying to think if there's anything else that I want to cover on this, but there really isn't. Just some slight cosmetic accessibility changes. I should send them an email and tell them that it says wheelchair state unknown. And we need to get that fixed. But beyond that, if it is real-time data, it is going to report it as such. Minus the wheelchair state unknown. And, of course, your mileage may vary. Welcome to Podcast 311. I'm not about to give out any answers because this assignment isn't due yet, but I want to talk about the fun I'm about to have. And this is in regards to transcribing a letter. And Braille 2000 is going to be very powerful to me as a blind transcriber when it is time for me to utilize it in my work. And I say this because I got to thinking, why should I type out this letter, whether I use Braille 2000, I use the Google Docs program for Word, or WordPad itself? So I called Bob and was asking him some questions about not necessarily how to do the assignment, because I'm more than capable of typing it up. I've done Braille to print transcription before. But I wanted to do it in a way where I would find it fun and challenging. And without giving any answers away, because I honestly understand what needs to be done, and there's still a little bit work to be done. I found an error that was actually part of the import process, but it wasn't the translation software itself. It was one particular symbol within the RTF that I received. You see, all Bob did for me was extract the text from the PDF file of the lesson and put it into an RTF file for me. The rest of it is trial and error. And Bob gave me some numbers to try, but overall, the answer is something that I have to figure out myself, right? So I could take his word for it by plugging it in and seeing what it looks like, and then I can go in and adjust it and redo the whole thing. In no way am I going to give away the answers, but this is the part that I'm really going to enjoy. And there are a whole entire list of what Braille 2000 calls percent codes, and they include positioning of runover, i.e. for this particular letter, the one address needs to be not quite to the right margin, but close to the right margin. The inside address is needing to be at the margin, and then of course the body of the letter, and the closure, if you're simulating print, needs to be at the, I'd call it center, maybe a little bit off center, and then of course there's a PS, and in the lesson, it talks about how you need to have a blank line in certain parts of the letter. When you import the RTF, unless indicated, blank lines are stripped from the file to produce everything without blank lines. But there's a percent code to keep those blank lines in effect. And the only thing that I still haven't done, because I would like to check where my name and address as part of the assignment needs to go, because now we're actually doing formatting, correct? So, this is going to get very interesting. And when you read this in grade one, it's like, I don't know, it starts on page, I believe it's going to be on A, 1312, which it is. And it goes all the way to C, 1313, which is Braille page 30. So it starts on Braille page 25 and goes to the top of Braille page 30 in the lesson book. And even transcribed fully, it goes to the top of the fifth page. Now, cheerio old bean EGG at the end of the letter is on the right. And there's one other thing that I need to fix where cordially yours, Ed Goodman, in this letter is, I don't know if it's necessarily centered, but yet, to me, it feels centered. So, this letter is quite interesting, and I thought what I would do is I would read you this letter so you have an idea of what we're going to be getting into. No, it actually did do what I wanted. Oh, no, it didn't. Well, maybe it did. Because it also says EGG/him. So the first half of the letter goes from page 1 to, like, the middle of page 3. And the PS goes from the middle of page 3 all the way to the top of page 5. Transcribed, right? It's like, seriously? And, of course, the rules stipulate that each of the pages have to have the lesson number. And I am going to be happy that this is going to change. And one of the things that I was confused about was whether or not the date on this letter, 32972, was supposed to be on the far right, because the Braille has it on the far right. So the letter reads, 745 16th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20006, 32972. Mr. J.W. Weatherby, 116 Crumpet Street, London, W2N6AA, England. So all of this so far is about how the letters and numbers and various things we've learned throughout the course take effect. And AA is fully capitalized, and the W is capitalized, the N is capitalized. And of course, our job is to make sure that the Braille transcription software did it the way that we were taught. Dear Jim, shortly after 10 a.m. February 5th, the SS Tub reached the good old USA with me and the missus on board. We were treated to the very best weather the Atlantic has to offer, i.e. wind, rain, and fog, with the temperature dropping to 5 degrees Fahrenheit at times. And I'll stop here to say that I did find another error, and I found this error once before, when scanning the file myself, But I think it has something to do with the sign that was used, because there is a way to do degrees, but they superscripted it according to what Bob said. So it has it as an O, so it's a dot 4O, but that's wrong. So I found it on page 1, and I need to go correct it. And that's simple to do. Now, continuing the reading, it says, however, the unpleasantness greatly mitigated by the fact that we became acquainted with many interesting people. Allow me, for instance, to introduce you to Dr. W. M. Windham. And W. M. is got a period with it. And, of course, Dr. is D.R. period. In parentheses, it says the D.R., so I'll say D.R. here, is for Ph.D., not M.D., close parentheses. Windy, as he was familiarly known to his fellow passengers, was formerly head of the Phys Ed Dept, or Physical Education Department. So these are all short forms known as abbreviations, which was talked about in an earlier lesson, of an obscure institution in New Haven, Connecticut, otherwise the short form of Connecticut, CONN, period. His specialty is the improvement of health through breakthrough control and yoga, and being a typical absent-minded prof, otherwise known as professor, short form. We jokingly told him that we feared we might someday find him turning blue in the face from having forgotten to resume breathing. Also on board were an AFL-CIO, which is hyphenated, official from Texas with an LLD. LLD is an abbreviation from TCU. In parentheses, C-1970. And a D-Lit, capital D period, Lit, L-I-T-T, from UCLA, and a conservative MP from somewhere in Sussex whose father had served with Eisenhower at SHAEF, which is initialized, so it's all periods, S period H period A period E period F, during the 2D World War. And I had to do a double take because I looked at the Braille copy of this, and it does say 2D. So I thought I was going to have to correct this to second, but it doesn't seem that way. These two were constantly engaged in interminable arguments over the UN and NATO. A third passenger would sometimes join in these discussions. He was a retired AT&T, and of course AT&T is AT ampersand T, executive who often reminisced about FDR, an abbreviation for the president at that time, and recalled how he had approved the WPA projects, and WPA is in all caps. Further diversion was provided by a comedian who had performed on several TV networks, including ABC, all caps, and NBC, all caps. His wife was more interested in her lineage than in comedy and frequently reminded us of her membership in the DAR. And I did find another error because the page number in the next that starts the next page in the Braille, or in the print anyway, was transferred over, and I thought I got rid of that. So that's something else to fix. Like I said, it's a first draft, But I'm also stopping here to explain what I'm seeing so that you understand the errors that you could face. I will finish this account in a later letter as I must start packing. The missus and I are taking off for Florida for a month of rest in the sun. Until the 1st of May, address your letters to me, C.O. Jen H.G. Fairweather, 1210 Street, St. Augustine Road, W. Palm Beach, otherwise known as West Palm Beach, Florida, 33401. Telephone number 305-743-6262. Cordially yours, Ed Goodman, EGG/Ham. P.S. 41072. You can thank a sudden change in the weather for the fact that you are finally receiving this letter. Since arriving here in Florida, which is abbreviated, the temperature has been in the 70s and 80s until last night when it became turning cold, when it began turning colder about 10 p.m. And early this a.m., the thermometer at our veranda registered 45 degrees Fahrenheit. I was forced to dig out my coat, and lo and behold, there, in the pocket was your letter, still unmailed. Our trip down was remarkably fast, 2 hours, 20 minutes. Not bad for a 1,200-mile jaunt, mile is MI period. Wouldn't you say? We were able to hitch a ride on an old B-52 that was being flown to Florida to be used in training missions. Again, Florida is FLA. Jen Fairweather has a beautiful and comfortable house with a large swimming pool that measures 20 feet 6 inches by 4 feet, or by 40 feet, I believe is what this is, because it's apostrophes and quotes, so it's 20 apostrophe 6 quotes, so I believe it's 20 feet 6 inches by 40 feet. The only disturbing factor which somewhat interferes with my rest and quiet is a constantly barking dog that has the bark of a Great Dane, but is about 20 inches long, inches is INS period, and weighs all of 2 pounds soaking wet. And it's 2 with the number in print, which is the cross hatch in Braille, 456TH. I am proud to say that I will soon be able to type my own letters. While I was in England, I began taking a correspondence course in typing at the exorbitant cost of £495, which the pound sign is first, 10% off for cash. I am now struggling with the intricacies of ampersand, at, dollar sign, and degrees. After next month, I will no longer need the services of a secretary. Remember our conversation about the Japanese yen? If you will check page C6, section 4 of last Sunday's paper, you will see that it is on the rebound. Even so, I'll stick with investing in the good old U.S. dollar, where it's a dollar sign, and or the British pound, and it's the pound sign, the symbol for pound, not the number sign. The wife and I are considering taking a trip to France and Belg, it's B-E-L-G, I think it might be Belgium, next spring. Would you be interested in joining us? Perhaps we could rent a BMW and do Europe in style. And there's a smiley emoticon, and they teach us transcriber's note, and how UEB has a, you know, an option to mark symbols like smiley face with a dot for ED and something of your choice. And if it's constant, then you would put it on the special symbols page. I chose dot for ED, which is the symbol we use, and S. And in the transcriber's note, I put smiley face. Finally, cheerio old bean, EGG. Now that's the letter and my commentary on what I've done, what I found. I know I still need to correct things and finalize it, but I tell you what, these percent codes are going to be quite handy come later lessons and even in my work, because then I can do precise editing in an accessible editor. And of course, I can bring it into Braille 2000 and see what it looks like. And of course, when I finally do get an embosser and I want to look at it, I can Braille out a page. Recently, Braille Institute asked me to look at their catalog, and there was a question on URLs. And so I need to do a little lookup, but I did tell them about the termination indicator and how we as transcribers need to be aware of that. And I'm not going to give you any answers yet on what we found out about that, but I need to check one other thing in regards to that, because that book's not at Braille Institute, but I did take a look at the Braille lesson book that was available to me there. So this is going to be a very interesting time. I have to wait quite a while now because my instructor is going to be out of town. I just emailed to ask him a question, and he told me to wait and write him when he gets back on a specific day, because he didn't understand my question. But I made it very simple. I said, my question was, should I put my name and address in cell 1 or cell 3 like I've done in other courses, in other lessons? Because now we're doing formatting for 13. And he's like, I don't understand your question. I'm like, really, dude? No hard feelings. But I thought that was kind of interesting. I thought I was direct with the question. I said, hi, instructor, but I wrote his name. I've been working hard on lesson 13, and while I know it's not due yet, I'm wondering what position on the page you want me to put my name and address, the margin or cell 3. I've done both depending on assignment, but I'm curious on this one. I didn't put it, and I got a Braille out and a first draft. Thanks for your continued support and safe travels, because I know he's been saying for a while he's going out of town. And he said, I don't understand your question. The question is, should I put the name and address in cell 1 or cell 3 as I've done before? Or is there a certain cell you need me to put it in? Because now we're dealing with formatting, and I don't know exactly how we should add that, but I'll find that out. I'm not going to give any answers away, but I will give out a couple of hints and examples, and I'm not about to say that these are correct. To keep the blank line, if you're working in Word or even WordPad with the RTF file, it's percent space. If you want to align the Braille like you do for the address at the top, you could put percent 18 colon 1, or I'm sorry, 18-1. Now 18-1 says put this on the 18th cell on this line and run over on cell 1. But the goal is not to have it run over at all. And as a transcriber, we have to figure that out based on this correspondence letter, which is what this is. Then, of course, you know, the blank lines. The paragraphs are 3-1, and the salutation, you know, cordially yours, Ed Goodman, EGG/ham, need to be aligned to the right, but yet no runover. So, another example, although I'm not exactly sure if this is correct, but it seems to work, would be %26-1. And, of course, I used %1-1, or Bob said you could use %body, I believe, or %left or something. I forget exactly which one it is offhand, but there's another one that will put it on the margin. So, throughout my file, I have these codes. Now, there's another trick. Because of the fact that we need the running head of the lesson number, there is another percent code that I used called runhead. The code is on a line of its own, and lesson 13 is on a line of its own. So that's what starts the file. And in no way am I saying these are correct yet, but I'm giving you what I learned based on the percent codes that I'm learning to use to help format the letter, and what the print shows. So I'm getting help understanding what the print shows and all of that good stuff. And of course, for the transcriber note, there is an edit, insert, transcriber note, opening and closing. And you could put that in print, or of course you could use 6-key entry if you would like to do that. So definitely, this is going to be a lot of fun, because now it's showtime, and I am definitely looking forward to the next several lessons. The only thing that I'm not really interested in is the math, and that has definitely changed from English Braille American Edition to Unified English Braille. We're going to learn all that together, because it's simple math and fractions and things. And also, the foreign language. I don't know Spanish enough, and I don't remember if it's assignment 15 or what, but it is going to be imperative that we understand the aspects of Braille, which I do. And, of course, now, with all of the grade symbols and everything else, I now understand why this is so important. And, of course, I understood that. But my problem was that I knew a lot of it, and I'm not claiming to be a know-it-all, but at the same time, I wanted to get to what I didn't know. But the only way to do that is to take the course. You may screw up in some aspects and you think you get it, and that's been my whole struggle, but it's understandable. And now that I'm getting into the formatting, you can appreciate, as much as I do, the hard work they do to make sure that you're doing it correctly. So when you do get to this portion, you, as a transcriber, whether you're blind or sighted, can nail this. And that's what they want from you. So, Not faulting the instructor for not understanding my question offhand. I could have probably worded it a little differently, but I will tackle that. I need to make some other corrections, and we shall see how it goes. But that's the beginning of percent directives, which will really make transcribing a hell of a lot easier. You just import that RTF, and if you do it correctly, it imports it. By default, it's UEB, but you can change the grade. You can even do other types of things with these percent codes. And what I'd like to eventually do is get these percent codes and get them brailled so that I have a list of them at my disposal. And we can talk about it in due time. Have you used Braille 2000? And have you used the percent codes? And what have you thought of them? Please get in contact with me, because my email address is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. I hope that you will enjoy learning with me how I could utilize this to aid me in getting this the best that I can make it. I'm Jared Reimer. This is Podcast 311. Thank you so much for checking out the Technology Podcast. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please feel free to reach out to me. My email and iMessage for this podcast is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. If you have any other personal contact information, you may use that as well. And I hope to be back on another edition of the Tech Podcast really soon, where you'll end up finding out within the coming month, it probably won't be next time, but within the coming month, you'll find out about my passing or failing of Assignment 13, as discussed in our final segment. And, of course, I'll try and find some great, interesting news that we can talk about, break down, and who knows, if there's a guest that wants to come on and talk about something, we'll even make room for that, too. The Tech Podcast will be back very soon, and I hope to see you all then.